With Capella University's FlexPath format, you can set your own deadlines, learn at your pace, and access most coursework from anywhere at any time. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, starting May 8th wherever you get your podcasts.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by the Inspire Collection by Kalia. Just because you're working out doesn't mean you shouldn't look fabulous. The Inspire Collection by Kalia was designed with both style and performance in mind. It looks good, feels good, and stays put no matter how you move. And the collection has everything you need for a day at the gym. A support bra, crop tanks, bike shorts, amazing leggings, and more. It's their most versatile collection yet. Shop the Inspire Collection by Kalia now, exclusively at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Welcome to the second series of the Olive Magazine Vegan Podcast. I'm Janine, Deputy Editor and Podcast Host, and each week I'll be joined by an expert to take a dive into a specialist plant-based subject. This week I'm learning about what we can and can't drink on a vegan diet. Okay, I'm here with our drinks writer, Hannah. Hi, Hannah.
Hi.
And we're going to be talking about what to look out for when choosing vegan drinks, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic. First of all, Hannah, why are some alcoholic drinks not vegan?
So probably the main thing that people might know about, but if you haven't, is not all beer and wine is vegan.
Okay.
And the reason because of that is the process to make wine and beer clear and not hazy,
yeah,
which is really common, and most... wine and beer producers will do that, or at least mainstream ones,
yeah.
It's a process called fining.
Okay.
So fining basically involves adding a substance to wine,
yeah,
that basically, I won't go into the science too much, but basically it helps the kind of sediments and all the things you want to get rid of in the wine.
Yeah.
It sort of clings to it, and then you can flush it out of the wine,
yeah,
if that makes sense. So you can filter it out at the end.
Yeah.
Fining is done like after fermentation, before you age and bottle the wine.
Yeah.
And traditionally, you would use often animal-derived products.
Yeah.
So things like albumin, which is egg white.
Yeah.
Casein, which is like a milk protein. Isinglass, which is fish bladder taken from fish bladders.
Okay.
This is banned now, but you used to traditionally use bull's blood.
Oh my God, really?
For certain wines, yeah.
I've actually seen wine called bull's blood before.
Yeah, I think it's a Hungarian wine.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
So they were embracing it fully.
Yeah, I'm not sure which country this was used in, but yeah, so that was, and there was another one, chitin, which is like made from crustacean shells.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So those are ingredients that are still used now. Not with all wines, but that's traditionally what people used. So obviously, if you're going to use animal products like that in finding your beer and wine, it's not going to be vegan.
So what stage of the wine production does that happen?
So I'm not a winemaker, but very, very broadly, what you do is you get the grapes,
yep,
and you crush them, which obviously creates something called the must, which is like the juice and the skins and the stems. And then you add yeast, ferment it into wine.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that is usually when you transport the wine into like tanks,
right,
or vessels. And that's when you will find the wine.
Yeah.
And then after that, you'll age it and bottle it.
So the sort of things we're taking out are things like tiny particles of the skin, and I guess the grape stems as well. Is that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it'll be stuff like that. But it's also generally anything in the wine that'll make it look hazy, or that might affect sort of the aroma, colour, or bitterness.
Okay, yeah, because I read that actually the reason that using finings is so important for winemakers is that it kind of gives the wine a smoothness as well. It takes away bitterness.
Yeah, so I think that's quite important for red wine.
Yeah.
But it's fining is kind of a contentious topic.
Yeah.
Because not all winemakers necessarily think you need to do it.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So essentially, you can like clarify, you can make wine clear and not hazy if you just put it in a cool place and just let it rest.
Oh, wow.
And then eventually it takes months, all the
sediment, everything you want,
yeah, will go to the bottom. But obviously that takes longer. So fining is like a quicker way.
And it costs more money as well, doesn't
it?
Because you're going to have to, because you've got time waiting for your wine to come to maturity.
Exactly. So in order to kind of have affordable wine, fining is something that a lot of producers do. And a lot of producers do believe that it results in a better wine. However, a lot of natural wine producers believe that fining the wine, and this is the same for beer as well.
Yeah.
They believe that it would negatively affect the flavour of the wine or alter it in some way.
Okay.
So they'll either, so often they'll say, and they'll label on the bottle, you know, unfined or unfiltered.
Oh, so if you see unfiltered, that means it hasn't been. So are we talking about, when we talk about natural wines, they wouldn't have gone through that fining process?
Wine, potentially. So natural wine is a really, really broad umbrella term.
Yeah.
It can involve everything from organic and biodynamic wines to, you know, no additives in the wine, but then some producers might add some. It's not like a legal term.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's more of a movement.
Yes, exactly. So I would look on the bottle for it to say unfined or unfiltered. Some wines will actually say they're vegan or vegetarian as well. But it's quite a sort of murky area.
It's a murky area, isn't it? Because I was reading about it and it said, a lot of what I read said, because the finings, things like the albumin or the casein or whatever they use, because they don't appear in the final wine, they don't necessarily have to be labelled on the bottle, depending on where the wine comes from. You know, they don't have to be declared. So basically, I think, and this goes for a lot of stuff, there's the Vegan Society, which is a really useful resource for loads of different reasons. If you apply to them to have a Vegan Society label on your bottle, whatever it is, then they will, you'll get that certificate to say your wine is absolutely vegan. However, if you get a bottle of wine that doesn't have that, it doesn't necessarily mean it's not vegan.
No.
So that's quite, you know, confusing for the consumer, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest, I delved into it and I kind of went down a rabbit hole of reading about EU and UK laws for wine labelling, which, it was quite dense. Yeah. But, so for example, I think legally in the UK, you have to say if your wine contains allergens like milk or egg, but only above a certain amount. So if the amounts are so low,
like
that they're
trace,
not detectable.
Yeah.
And also there's the separate issue of even if you say, oh, well, actually we've removed all the egg and milk, all the traces of it from the wine.
Yeah.
If you still used it to make the wine,
then
if you're vegan, that's still not, you know, you're probably not going to want to drink that, right?
No, because true, because
products were used
within, in the manufacture of it,
Even if they're not in the final product, it's still, you know, it's still problematic, right?
Yeah, but yeah, I think the main thing is if you want rock solid proof, then you would be looking for that vegan label. And I think a lot of manufacturers are getting a lot more wise to it. And if they're not using it, they will apply for that vegan certificate. And there's some great online resources. You know, just a simple Google will give you lists of products in the UK and worldwide that are vegan and that they've kind of traced back and found out whether they're vegan or not. When you talk about beer, I mean, are they using the same kind of clarification ingredients in beer that they use in winemaking?
Similar ones as well. I think the process of when it's added in beer is slightly different.
Right.
But checking to see if a beer is vegan is also important. It's also worth adding that beer and wine can be fined with vegan ingredients as well.
Okay.
So it's not a case of if a beer or wine has been fined, you can't go near it if you're vegan. They just use products like bentonite, which is made from volcanic ash and activated charcoal. And actually quite a variety of other kind of clever ingredients to fine. And actually more and more wine and beer producers, if they want to fine their wine and clarify it.
Yeah.
we'll go for that.
We'll go for that.
And actually, you know, generally, I'm seeing a lot of like new vegan wine brands that really kind of want to push the fact that they're vegan. Supermarkets will often shout and say, you know, they'll have sections which are like vegan wines on the website, and they're really keen to kind of, and same for like, you know, wine clubs and online wine retailers. And I think it's something that I suspect is going to become, you know, more and more widespread.
Yeah, it's kind of visibility, isn't it? Like, I think more and more people are realizing there's a huge market out there to make it easier for people to make the choice. So they are actually labeling better. I mean, as a rule, it is just beer and wine which use that clarification process. But then things that people should be aware of otherwise, if you're talking about drinks or the additives that you could have. So say, and simple things like an obvious one would be honey, like in a liqueur, if there was honey used as a sweetener in a liqueur. But and the other thing that I was really surprised to find out about on the non-alcoholic drinks is that it's quite common for soft drinks to have hidden ingredients, which I found bizarre. What sort of things do they use for that?
Yes, so I always thought with soft drinks, it was, you know, adding, you know, secret amounts of sugar or strange sweeteners. But yeah, it turns out there's a lot of animal-based products that are used in soft drinks. So gelatin is used to clarify some drinks. And animal-based enzymes are also used for the same thing. And there's also a lot of like nutritional additives that are animal-derived that are used for things like a protein drinks.
Yeah, like a protein. I think a big one was adding protein to those like protein-rich drinks.
Yeah.
Because obviously it might be a matter of cost, or it might be a matter of like what's the most efficient way of getting protein into a drink. But a lot of those are animal derived. And also like a really old one, I think, that we all know is E120 or cochineal, which is made from insect shells. And that gives you this ridiculously bright red colour.
Mm.
So that's something to look out for. Because again, if it's an E number, it can be listed as an E number. It doesn't have to be listed as what it is. So it's kind of up to you or to look for that little vegan sign, or to maybe go back and check all the ingredients and what they actually refer to. So not great for the consumer for visibility, but I guess there's lots of, I think, you know, maybe one day we'll do a podcast on labeling, because it's a really interesting subject, like what you're required to declare.
Yeah.
And what you're allowed to not declare under the sort of various restrictions.
Yeah. There's a lot of like murky workarounds and, you know, that kind of thing.
Stick around for more drinks advice from Hannah. So again, if you're going to, you know, most of these, I guess, you know, things like the protein ads and stuff, which it's probably a particular kind of drink, but definitely always worth checking out the label. Finally, I just wanted to talk about cocktails, because obviously it's huge. Like, cocktails are one of the biggest things on our website. We've got amazing new drinks newsletter that goes out every month now, is it?
So there's every fortnight, and then there's a monthly one as well.
Amazing.
So every 2 weeks.
And we're creating bespoke cocktails for that. We're creating loads of different guides. You're in charge of that as well. Another one of your babies. But our readers just love cocktails. And I think there's a few little sort of tricks that you can do cocktail-wise just to get maybe the mouthfeel or to get the texture of a cocktail when you don't want to be using animal products. So can you talk us through a few of them?
Yes, so luckily it's pretty easy to veganize a cocktail if you need to. The first thing that comes to mind is sour cocktails.
Yeah.
So ones like amaretto sours and whiskey sours, they'll classically use egg white, and you add that in and shake it up with all the ingredients, and that will give that lovely creamy layer like at the top of the drink. But it's a really easy switch to make it vegan. So you just use aquafaba, which is the liquid from a can of chickpeas. And generally one egg white is like 2 tablespoons.
Right.
But generally I just add it in as I would normally, shake it up. And to be honest, I don't think there's much difference between using egg or aquafaba.
So is that a texture thing that it adds to the drink? What do you think it adds to it? Why is it always in a sours as well? I just wondered about that.
I think it's a texture thing. It adds a sort of, it adds kind of a creamy texture.
Yeah.
It adds a bit of body to the drink.
Yeah, body.
Because I think with the sour, you're using... you know, a liqueur, a spirit,
yeah,
and a citrus. So sometimes, and also because it's sour,
yeah,
it tastes sour. Yeah.
Also, it kind of balances it out a bit.
Adds a bit of, you know, kind of roundness. Yeah. You know, sours don't tend to be that sweet, and often sugar adds that kind of like texture, that sort of softer texture that you want. So I think the egg white kind of just, you know, balances it out.
Yeah. I think from reading, there's a lot of mixologists or bar people who are actually using aquafaba because they quite like it, yeah, you know, instead of egg white. Because obviously, if you get egg white in a drink in a bar, it will be pasteurized. Like they wouldn't use, but there might be people who still think it's a bit icky to have egg in a drink. You know, yeah, people who don't like egg, or if you're a bit worried at home, you might not want to shake up an egg white in case you of various reasons, health or otherwise. But also, I think the thing about aquafaba is it's quite bland, so you can get the texture without actually bringing any kind of flavor or anything into it.
And it's also easier.
And it's easier, yeah. True, yeah, exactly.
You know, shake on
the couch,
and you're done.
Cool. And what other things can we use and in place of?
So probably the couple of things I wanted to talk about was, first of all, we mentioned before, but honey isn't vegan. So any cocktail that requires honey, it's really easy to find another swap for that. So things like agave nectar.
Yeah, agave is great.
Which is lovely. I love that in using to make like a margarita.
Yeah, because it's got its own qualities as well, hasn't it? Sometimes honey can be too honey. It's quite a
powerful ingredient.
Yeah.
Or if you want something a bit boldly flavoured, maple syrup, brown rice syrup, or like date syrup.
Really rich.
Date syrup I think would be really good in something like an old fashioned.
Lovely, yeah.
Something like that. Another, and obviously the main thing that I certainly think about if I, you know, is cocktails made with like milk or cream.
Yeah.
So we're talking things like, you know, like a White Russian, for example.
Yeah.
But luckily, the quality of like vegan creams and milk and plant milks is just so good at the moment.
Yeah.
Anything that you want to use that you would normally use double cream for example, you could use something like cashew cream, or you can go to the supermarket, so Oatly do a kind of oat
cream, yeah,
of like a double cream. There's soya cream, and in terms of plant milks, I think you could use anything you like, really. It just depends on, I think most would work well, but it depends mostly on flavor. I quite like oat milk because I feel like it, for me, mimics the lactic.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's kind of got thick. It's got a thickness to it sometimes is missing. So it's like a texture thing. So if you're shaking it, you know, if you're using that in a White Russian.
Mm.
Also, like, flavour profile-wise, oat milk's quite bland. It's quite bland in itself, so you can add other flavours to it, I would say.
Definitely. Or if you wanted to have a twist to it. So I really love hazelnut milk.
Which is
just delicious. It's like,
I've never seen that.
It's really nice. It's very...
I was going to say, is it really expensive? Because hazelnuts are pricey.
Don't think it's too expensive, but I had it and it's like quite, it feels quite decadent.
Oh wow.
It's quite indulgent. Imagine liquidized hazelnuts are just but that again, if you made that in a White Russian, for example, that adds a really nice nutty element that harmonizes with the coffee, or cashew milk would also work well. Obviously, I mean, there's things like coconut milk and coconut cream.
Yeah.
They would add a really distinct flavour to the drink. So obviously a classic is like a pina colada. But if you're replacing it, I would think carefully about spirits you're matching it with. So if you're just like freestyling, I'd maybe match coconut milk with something like rum,
because it's just, you know, just stay in the same like country kind of thing where
and I feel like rum, the flavors in rum, and often some, you know, they'll have like little coconutty notes. That's probably best for something like coconut milk.
Pina colada's got to be the ultimate like vegan creamy cocktail, hasn't it? Because it is naturally vegan anyway.
And
but when you delicious. Think about it, you just think it is really good.
It is really good. I can only have one though. It's so indulgent. I like that. It's like having dessert.
Oh, that's brilliant, Hannah. Thank you so much. Like, so much inspiration there. If you want to go online and check out our amazing cocktail collections, do so. And I think what we're going to do is maybe put some little vegan suggestions on some of our cocktails about swap-ins, because I think that'd just be really useful for people, because the method's the same, but you know, the ingredients can be swapped out quite easily. But that was great. Thanks so much for coming to talk to us today, Hannah.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks for listening to the Olive Magazine podcast. For more information on things we talked about in this episode and to check out our back catalogue of over 200 episodes, head to olivemagazine.com.